Okay.
It was a two-story building, and some of the girls looked out the window, and when they saw, they started screaming. They recognized me and Paul. They came from our hometown. And they started screaming and crying, "Get us out of here, get us out of here." And we told them not to worry and don't get panicky. They are going to try and do everything possible to get you out. And we ran over to the soldiers and two disguised. We had cigarettes, a pack of 1,000 cigarettes. Do you know what that meant at that time? You could buy a building for 1,000 cigarettes. It was tremendous. We gave him a whole pack of cigarettes, of 1,000 cigarettes, and we gave him a bottle, a large, huge bottle of whiskey. Well, that whiskey was 96 proof, you know. And this soldiers, when they saw that, they were actually shaking, and they started drinking it. If I would only smell it, honestly, I would be knocked out. And they were taking it like, you know, like water. And they really let it down. And we told them, "What do you want? Go ahead, don't worry." And they just let us in. And all four of us, these two guys and Paul and myself, we walked right in and went upstairs. And there were about 50 of them, and mostly from our hometown. Not all of them, but the majority of them were from our hometown. And that reunion was unbelievable, and we told them not to worry, and we are going to see to it that they are going to get free today. And they were dancing and singing and crying and doing everything. So anyway, they had the belongings, whatever, after the liberation, you know, when the Russians took over, then they ran into homes and they grabbed their clothing and whatever they had, and everybody had already a package. And I told them, "When the hell was the package? What do you need them for?" "Oh, they are not going to let it go. Everybody needed it, you know, they wanted it." So, okay, we went out, and these two guys took us to a place where they had trucks, and we rented a huge, large truck, and we went back late in the evening, and we took the rest of the whiskey, whatever we had left, and the rest of the cigarettes, whatever we had left, and we gave it to them. And we told them that we wanted to take the girls to give them a good time, and we were bringing them back. And they didn't care, they didn't even know what was going on, actually. They were so drunk, they were just knocked out completely. And all the girls came, some of them threw down the packages from the first floor, because they didn't want to leave it there. Some of it was left there, you know, it was meaningless anyway. And we took them with this truck to the rail station in Lodz, and we told the man in charge at the station, we told him who we are and we have these people and we're going to take them to Krakow. And the next train was supposed to leave in about an hour, and he gave us a special car, you know, and we loaded up over there, and the next train, we were attached right to that train, and we went into Krakow. We arrived in Krakow around midnight or so. Well, sometimes really early in the morning, it was still dark and everything. And those girls adopted us, Paul and me, as their brothers, you know. It is incredible what they carried on, my God, you know. And then we got home and we had to tell the story over again, you know, to everybody what happened and how it happened and so on. And that was the most interesting experience that I had out of that, of those four trips. And most of them are in Israel. Some of them unfortunately died already, and some of them are still there. Every year, when they have a reunion, then Paul is getting a lot of stuff from them, you know, presents and so on. And he tells me that how ashamed he is of himself, that he has to enjoy the fruit of whatever he did, you know, and how happy he is and how much he misses us and so on and so forth. And when we were in Israel, unfortunately, it was a very short period of time. I couldn't meet any of the girls because I didn't know their addresses. And Paul and his wife, they were on a trip at that time. When we were there, he was here. We missed one another, you know, so I didn't see them. But he was here again about 2 months ago. I talked to him over the phone. He was in Los Angeles. And I got a letter from him a couple of weeks ago. I just wrote to him yesterday a letter, and we are keeping in touch very, very close. Well, that was a very fulfilling something that we accomplished at that time. And on the last trip that we made, we were left over about six guys from the train that we were asked whether we would like to stay in Prague, that is Czechoslovakia, and open an office, because that didn't make sense anymore to come back with the train back and forth, because first of all it was getting to be a little too costly, and secondly there wasn't enough, you know, we didn't know where to wait for them and how to manage the situation. And they wanted to have an office in Prague, in Czechoslovakia, and stay there until all the Hungarian and Romanian Jews were coming back. And that was strictly on a voluntary basis, and I volunteered because I had nobody at home anyway, so to me it really didn't matter, I didn't care. And I stayed there, and that is one very dear friend of mine who lives now in Providence, Rhode Island, and he is a very successful businessman today, but that's besides the point. He was one of the delegates and myself, and there's a Dr. Sturman who lived in Hawaii. When we were in Hawaii with my wife, and we met him over there, and it was a nice reunion. And there was another guy by the name Dr. Abraham, and he is dead already for 10 years already that he is gone. And we had an office. First we rented in a hotel, a little office, and we rented a room, and we have an office there. But then this Dr. Abraham, his wife originally came from Czechoslovakia, and he spoke a little bit the language, and he spoke a perfect German because he went to the University of Berlin. That's where he got his diploma from. And through him and through his connections, they got the Romanian embassy opened up, because there were no legal connections at that time between the Czechs and the Romanian government, and they opened up the Romanian embassy, and we moved in there, and we had an office there, and every day we went out to the train stations and we waited for all the trains whenever they arrived, and we were making announcements, you know, in Hungarian and Romanian, if there are anybody who wants to go home to get off the train, and we are here to help them. And through our office, we had about 50,000 people that went through our office, which was again a very fulfilling thing what we did over there. It was a very, very beautiful, beautiful work what we did in Czechoslovakia. And unfortunately, in the very beginning of 1946, first of all, at the end of 45, my wife and your sister and the whole group of other people, they were in Bergen Belsen. And that was already after the liberation, you know, the British took over and the Americans and so on. And as I told you before, that I ran out to the rail station there on the basis and so on, and one day all of a sudden I got a call that there is a train coming in from Bergen, from that part of Germany, that there are a lot of Hungarian and Romanian refugees that took me on that train. And we went out there and I waited for the train, and it so happened that they had a leader who was in charge of the whole group, and he is a very dear friend of mine. He's here in New York now. His name is Dr. Solomon. At that time he wasn't a doctor, but now he is. And when he saw me, he said, "What in the world are you doing here?" And I told him. He said, "You know who is here? Clara and Irene." And at that time we were engaged already, you know.
Before the war you were engaged?
Before the war we were engaged. And she, well, it wasn't before the war, it was before the concentration camp. And at the time when I was home, you know, from Sinkin, I saw what you that's when we got engaged. And she said, "Clara and Irene are here." I said, "I don't believe it." She said, "Yeah, they are here." And he started running up and down, you know, screaming and yelling, "Clara, Irene, are you here?" And, you know, and all of a sudden they said, "Yes, they are right here." And I walked over there and I ran in there to that car where they were sitting. And Clara looked at me and she passed out right there, you know, which was.
You didn't know she was alive?
No, I didn't have the slightest idea. I didn't know anything about anybody. So naturally, I took him off the train, and he came along with me. I had my own car at that time already. I was a big shot, you know, and I took him in there, and like the embassy, we had a beautiful living quarter over there, and they just couldn't get over it, you know, and they really were very impressed, and the following day we went out and bought him all kinds of clothing, whatever we could get him, you know, and it was really something. And then in November, beginning of November, we decided that we are going to go home because we wanted to get married, you know, they stayed there with us, and by train, by car, I had a car. And we drove home all the way, my sister-in-law, and Clara, and another friend who also came from the concentration camp, and we all went together, and we went home, and one of her aunts, of Clara's aunt, her mother's sister was alive, and she escaped the concentration camp. She came back home. And, we moved into her house, and she arranged, she made a wedding for us, you know, and we had after we got married in January, the middle of January. We got married in December, the 2nd of December we got married, and then we went to Bucharest for a couple of weeks, and then we came back, and we decided we are going to go back because we didn't want to stay in Romania under no circumstances. And we went back to Czechoslovakia, to Prague, and at this point, unfortunately, the whole story was already changed because the Romanian delegation came in and there were some anti-Semites, really, who were Jew haters. And they came in and they told us what tried to do, we had to stay here, and, you know, they started all that monkey business, and then we decided that we had enough of this. And we went across to Germany, and we went to Munich, and we lived in Munich until 1949, and that was the time when we finally got our visa and we came out to the United States.
So you've been here ever since?
Since 1949. 1949, since I'm here I got into the dry cleaning business. I worked for the famous cleaners for 20 years, and then I ran it on my own, and I left for my business about a year ago.
And you have one daughter.
And I have one daughter who is married. We have two grandchildren, and her husband is a doctor. They just moved to Florida, and they're very happy. As a matter of fact, we are going down there for 3 months in January.
Okay.
And we are very happy and satisfied. You know, we can't complain. We had a good life, with the exception of the illness that I have. Otherwise, I really cannot complain. I am very, very happy and satisfied with my family and the way we live.
Do you have any comments or conclusions or feelings that you about the whole experience, about the war?
Well, as far as my comments are concerned, all I can tell you, Kay, that we are all getting older. I'm already 67 years old. I'm 66 actually. In January, I was 67 years old. This will never happen again. And I tell you right now that if anybody would come into my house like they did over there, and they just ordered you to get out and take you to a concentration camp or whatever, it will never happen again. Somebody else will have to die before I do. I don't care if they kill me, but somebody else will die for sure before I get killed. This is my only comment that I have made. This will never happen again, and I hope that everybody who went through these experiences have the same feelings and feel exactly the same way as I do about it.